Let's call this meeting to order. With that, Representative Miller, did you read the minutes of the last meeting?
I apologize, Mr. Chair, I did not.
Well, we could make you a speed reader.
Give me 30
right
seconds
away.
And I'll. I've read the minutes and I'll move the minutes. And
Representative Mahoney moves the minutes.
Just so that anyone knows, we have all read the minutes.
Yes, I've read the minutes.
Absolutely. For the 22nd. Representative Mahoney moves the minutes of January 22nd. All in favor of him approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Now, first up, one of my favorite legislators in the whole world, Representative Anderson, has House File 65. And I believe we're going to refer this to Representative Garofalo's committee, is what his committee administrator said he would like to hear both of them first before they go to taxes.
Okay, I guess I'll have that conversation with Representative Garofalo.
Would you? Yeah. You want to shortcut it. I know how to do it. Other than that, would you please proceed and give an overview of your bill, please?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And which bill did you want me to start with? Did you want
House File? The first one on my list is House File 65.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we're doing here, and you'll notice in the bill, I'm looking to increase the angel investor tax credit. As for those of you that have been here at the legislature know, the angel investor tax credit, when it was first instituted in 2010, it was a bipartisan measure offered by Representative Mahoney and Representative Dabney and those folks championing that issue. It has been exhausted at a fast pace. I think the first go-around, it was exhausted by August, then it was July, then it was May, and this last time around, the funds were exhausted by March. And I think that speaks to Minnesota's entrepreneurial spirit. And I have with me today some folks that are in that process of innovation here for the state. I'd like to have them come up and testify. But what I'm looking to do is increase the credit amount since there is such a demand for these funds. As you note in the bill itself, I have not put an amount in. I'm probably looking at the $18 million mark. In the last go around, you guys increased it from $12 million to $15 million. And given the demand that we've had on these funds, that's kind of the ballpark figure. But I'm open to suggestions from members, too, that have more experience on this issue as well. So with that, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, if I could have some folks come up. And
we're looking forward to it.
Great.
Kim? Would you please give your name for the record and start with your testimony, please?
Sure. I am Michael Lacey. I am the founder and CEO of Digineer. We're a management and technology consulting company. And I'm also an angel investor. I moved to Minnesota in 1993 from Michigan because of opportunity for work. In 1998, I had an opportunity to start my own company. I don't believe at the time there was an angel tax credit option, so I started with $3,500 of my own cash. And 17 years later, I've been lucky and I guess successful enough to be able to mentor other entrepreneurs and to kind of help them get their businesses off the ground. About 2-3 years ago, a friend of a friend called me and said, "Hey, I met this kid. He's a student at the U. He's got this really great idea. It's a technology thing. You should talk to him. He reminds me of you." So I met Chad at Good Day Cafe for breakfast, listened to his idea, and I thought, you know what? This is a really good idea. So for about 2 years, we met at the Dunn Brothers in the North Loop where I live, just talking about his idea every Saturday. Building the business case, building the model, talking about the technology, talking about what was possible. And when I finally felt like, you know, he's got something here that really can take off as a business, I got a handful of friends and other people that I know together, and we talked about investing, and I decided I would be the lead investor. One of the things the Angel Tax Credit does, if you're in my seat, right, is I'm looking at this and I'm going, all right, I've already gambled my family's life savings once, actually probably every year, and I'm now looking at doing it again, possibly for somebody else who's a kid I don't know, but I spent enough time with to know that he's got the chops to build a business. And so I invested, this was 2013, I think it was, 2013. Chad has since put that to good use, has built a mobile app that is used by college kids at the U. He can talk about all the cool stuff it does and the stats and how much kids love it and whatnot. But he has now just recently gone on to secure another round of funding, I think in large part because he had something to start with. Being in the technology business myself, and also the chairman of the Minnesota High Tech Association, one of the things about technology is that it's very fast, it's very fluid, it's very dynamic, and it changes a lot, which means it requires investment in order for technology companies to get up, get going, and get off the ground. And in my experience, the entrepreneurial community, which I'm very well plugged into, Minnesota has a wealth of entrepreneurs who have been very successful themselves because they've had help along the way. Some of it was financial, some of it was mentoring, some of it was, you know, a customer that pulled them aside and said, hey, your idea is a dumb one, let me give you some better ideas, right? But they all want to give back to other aspiring entrepreneurs because most of us recognize we're lucky, we're very blessed. It's taken a lot of hard work to get where we are, and certainly we deserve some of the credit, but we've had, you know, most people, great employees and great mentors and great people that help us along the way. And so I think there are a lot of other people like myself that would benefit from an expanded Angel Tax Credit.
Chad, would you like to?
Absolutely.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record so they know you are here as Representative Groffel says 100 years from now.
I got that from you.
Oh, okay. He got that from McElroy.
There you go.
Well, my name is Chad Olson, and the quick background on me, what got me here today, basically is Chad Olson. I don't really look like an Olson, but I was adopted, and I was raised by a wonderful family. My father worked at Wells Fargo for 35 years, and he is not an entrepreneur. He's the traditional kind of mindset guy, and throughout college, I started this application called Buy Me, and it started taking off on just students building a rough development project, and it was going so well to the point where we are selling people food because it is a deal application similar to like what a Groupon is, but only for students. And we were breaking sales records, and this is the point where I don't know what to do, and that's where I got to meet Michael, like he had mentioned. And from that point on, the biggest thing he helped me with from the start was mentoring, and that's why the Angel Tax Credit for me, yes, money is important to starting any business, but it has drastically helped me to get where I am today because I have other specific friends that, you know, they're college-age students that have great ideas, but they might be going out to, you know, Palo Alto or something else like that. But with the mentorship here from Michael and then him able to help fund my business was a huge step for me. And like Michael had mentioned too, I'm about to secure another round as of like this week. For Buy Me to expand across the country. So for me, it's a wonderful thing for the state and also for other fellow entrepreneurs, because if we can get more exposure to things like this and opportunities for us, I strongly believe that it will grow the entrepreneur community, whether it's inside the city to all the way outside of the entire parts of the state. And this thing would not have, put it this way, I do not believe Buy Me would be where it's at today, going nationwide, if it wasn't for Michael's initial investment and getting my second round that I have coming in this week.
Sounds like a great, great effort. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody have any questions for the testifiers? Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, congratulations on your business. It sounds like a great business that you have created.
Thank you.
Could you share with us what your annual income is?
Right now, well, that's the fun part. I'm figuring that out with the next round here, but it's probably about $20,000. So I'm still loving ramen noodles, but I will say that it's that's another thing on the quick insight in the business is this angel round or cash that we had infused in the company is really used for the product, and especially in my business specifically because it's so tech heavy, so it relies on a lot of that. So I put most of the funds towards the product.
I missed it here. Moran. And just for clarity, you say you did benefit from the angel investor tax credit?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Representative Mahoney. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is more of a question for the author. What is wrong with the $15 million? That was pretty deliberatively came to last year. Actually, was it last year or the year before? Have they run out this year already, or? Because I don't think they have, seeing how it's still January.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. As I stated in my earlier comments, I'm looking at the $18 million mark. That's based upon the past history that we've had with this credit. If you remember, we started off with the credit, and it was exhausted by the month of August, following year July, following year after that May, and this last year it was March that it was exhausted. So, the trend line is that it's getting exhausted at an earlier and earlier rate. We also changed how the credit is divided up, where a half of that amount goes to a Greater Minnesota. If those funds then aren't used, then they get put back into the fund. And I think that will help to spur growth and also put a greater demand on the funds. But if you have suggestions, I'd like to hear them. I know that you've had a lot of experience with this issue, so I welcome your input as well.
Mr. Chair, I'm coming to this a little off the top of my head. But the first year we had $12 million in, actually I think it might have been more than that, we went to August. And then the following years, wasn't it like $6 or $7 million, and we doubled it last year, this being the first year? And if you don't know that answer, maybe there's one of the fiscal staff might be able to. You have to look.
We're researching this right now.
Well, and the reason I ask that question is that, we're not even giving it a time frame to see if $15 million is the correct number. That's a significant tax break to very wealthy individuals. It's $15 million, and they get ownership of a company. And I've got a question for one of the testifiers, but that's one of my concerns. So while we're looking at that, could I ask a question of Mr. Lacey?
Certainly, and then Representative Norton has a question to do it while Anita's researching.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is it appropriate if these folks want to give a response or add some information
Certainly.
That will maybe be helpful?
Sure. To your point, Mr. Chair, also, the dollar amount, I know at least in the year that Chad was raising money, he started raising money in a year, but it had already run out. The next year we rushed and got everything done earlier in the year to try and kind of beat the deadline, I guess, if you will. Students, entrepreneurs, and other investors have ideas all year round. And I would just submit to you that when there's a very short time frame, it's only the people in the know and only the people with a lot of resources that could find a way of taking advantage of it. So not knowing exactly how long it would extend for if the dollar amount was larger, I'm not qualified to comment on that, but I would offer that if there's a larger tax credit amount, it gives people longer time to sort of understand it, find out about it, work their way through the process, and invest. And when entrepreneurs are looking for funding, as Chad was, because his business is tied to college students, so it follows the college calendar year, he was looking in the fall. And unfortunately, it wasn't available. So we waited, 4 months, I think, thereabouts, because he couldn't get any other investors. So just thought I would add that as maybe a comment.
Mr. Lacey, what percentage of the company, of Chad's company, do you envision yourself owning through the angel investment credit?
Currently, I own 22%. Is that correct? After his next round, that will go down. He's finalizing the dollars, but it'll go down to probably 18 to 15.
And I don't mean to put this towards you, but again, one of the issues with the angel investment tax credit is the bigger you make it, we're helping wealthy investors. You have to have a minimum of $200,000 in net income or $300,000 as a couple, excluding your home, or a base net worth of over $1 million, excluding your home. So that sometimes, we've not ever looked at the small investor. How do you get the person like Representative Gunther or Garofalo or Mahoney to be able to put together $5,000 each and actually take advantage of this? Because it again is just a system where if you have money, you're making more money. And then the other piece is, and I haven't looked at this for a couple of years, but Representative Anderson asked for a dollar figure. Having looked at the historical patterns of venture capital investment at an early stage, in the state is approximately $200 million, roughly on average, because some years we have a whole lot more and some years we have a whole lot less. So if you're trying to get to the number, $50 million would get you to 25%, which is kind of where that's going. And again, that's for people who earn more than $200,000 a year. Now, this was started out, well, maybe staff, did they come up?
We went to get the figure from taxes. We don't have session law here.
Okay.
Representative Norton.
Thank you. Just a couple things. First, I want to thank you for taking advantage of the Angel Investment Tax Credit, which many of us worked on to get in place. And it's very exciting that there are investors, and it's equally exciting that we have brilliant minds and brilliant entrepreneurs out there willing to give it a shot. So I thank you for that. You know, one of the issues that's come up every year as we've talked about this issue is that a lot of the money tends to get spent in a small geographic area, which is in the Twin Cities. And so we did pass this change that allotted a certain percent of it, the 7.5, to go to Greater Minnesota. As I understand it, a small portion of that, and it's early, obviously, in this year that this has taken effect, only a small portion of that has been tapped into. And so what I see you doing here is putting more that will just simply go into the metro area and not equally distributed or a portion of it to go to the greater Minnesota area. So that's really the only concern I have. It's not about whether we do it or not. It's that we've been trying to incent more greater Minnesota development. And I think someone mentioned that communication and people don't know about this. I think that's a real issue in rural Minnesota, too. And even if the people that are going to invest live in the Twin Cities area, they may want to invest more in some of those rural opportunities if they knew about them. So I think the department has a communication issue to deal with in order to make this work as well as it possibly can. And it has been successful, and I think will continue to be. But as we add money the way it's written and drafted right now, none of that goes to rural Minnesota. And so I guess, you know, being as how this is the Greater Minnesota Caucus, I thought I would just bring that up, that there might be another way to bump up the rural side if, in fact, it's tapped into. And if it's not, it comes back into the general pool anyway. So there really would be no downside. The other thing I was just going to bring up for you to think about is that part of the issue seems to be the availability, the timing of the availability. You know, you had to wait 4 months to do it. You know, it's possible that we put something in place where we have two times during the year when these are let, if you will, or the grants are let, or the credits are available, or whatever. So just something to think about in the future, that maybe there'd be two times for people who have a brilliant idea in January and people that have a brilliant idea in March, you know, that the money would still be available later. So just some thoughts, not really a question.
Representative Anderson, you look like you have something to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say all excellent suggestions, and I look forward to working with you on getting that language adjusted.
There's two things that I liked about this bill. Number one, you included women as entrepreneurs, which I always like to hear, since I only have daughters. And the other thing is any money that is not expended by Greater Minnesota cancels back into the pot so somebody else can use it, so it all will be used. So I like both of those ideas. I think they had a lot of thought behind them. Appreciate that. Anybody else have anything to say? Yes, Representative Mahoney.
Well, I was thinking of bringing this up a little later, but seeing how Representative Norton brought it up, Deed is a wonderful source of information if you ask. You just have to know to ask. In 2010 to 2014, 287 total deals were done. 214 of them were in Hennepin County and Ramsey County. And I won't bore you with this, but I, being kind of weird sometimes, I looked at the cities that they're in. Edina, Edenbury, all the way following that kind of western Hennepin County up to Maple Grove, has almost 66% of them. The rest of them in Hennepin County are clustered around the U of M campus. And they tend to move out shortly thereafter because they have small spaces to that Golden Crescent, as I like to call it. So have you got any ideas on how to fix that, Representative Anderson?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. I think Representative Norton was right. We do have a communication problem coming through our agency in making sure that people are aware that this is a resource available to them. And I think that it's our responsibility as legislators, you happen to represent St. Paul, to get that information out to the people that you represent in your community, as does Representative Barrett, Representative Moran, Representative Miller, Representative Keel, Representative Garofalo, and so on. We all have a responsibility to notify our people that we represent that this is a resource available to them. And hopefully we can work with the different organizations that are out there to help promote this. And I know that I talk about this issue. One of my Plymouth residents can speak at length of how often I talk about the Angel Investor Tax Credit to the people in my district. And I would hope that all of us do the same, because we all win in the end when businesses start here, when businesses grow here, and we take advantage of the technologies that they develop. When you look at BuyMe and what that does for the students at the University of Minnesota, that's huge. Think about that. And that's inspiring other students to do even more innovations. In fact, I just read an article here this morning talking about how at the Fargo-Moorhead area, the institutions, the higher institutions in that area, are actually promoting that students across all education spectrums take a business class, because it's not just business students that are starting up businesses. It's music students, it's any college of liberal arts students, it's across the board, because the innovation isn't just limited to business-oriented students, it's everybody. And I think as a state, we can take advantage of that, and I'm excited by this, and I can't wait till you go national. That is huge. So we are amongst these are the Bill Gates of the world. We are sitting among them right now, And you better get a picture with him, because someday he's going to be bigger than us, and he'll be doling out money everywhere. So happy to have this here, and the more we can do to grow that, I think it's a benefit for all of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, two things. Every year it's been approximately $12 million that they put in. In 2010, 11, 12, and 13. Thank you, staff. Very good at that. The other thing is that in the last round when we did this in the Jobs Committee, we put in women women and minority entrepreneurs. And we also directed and paid for, out of the committee budget, indeed to do regional meetings and presentations throughout the state, collaborative presentations and interactions across the state, an email campaign, and advertising campaigns. Now, apparently that one hasn't quite got to the newspapers, but it's gotten on the social media front. And again, in 10 days, we've done, or wait, I guess it's 26 or 27 days, we've done $1 million in Greater Minnesota at this particular time. One of my concerns, one of my problems with the Angel Investment Tax Credit, and yes, I did do this, I spent a lot of time trying to get this through many years ago, is that we are not willing to try to figure out how to spread this across the state. In the meetings, and I'm going to vote against this if it's a recorded vote or a voice vote or whatever at this particular time, because frankly, I don't trust the venture capitalists. They all, a dozen of them sat in front of me, and I said, you need to get in a car, you need to go to Wilmer, you need to go to Thief River Falls, you need to go to Duluth. Oh, yes. We don't have any problem getting in a car and driving somewhere to do this. And once you get outside the metro area, it's less than 10%. So, Mr. Lacey, you know, I'm sure, you know, you've done your due diligence. I know the High Tech Association has worked at this. I know the Association of Venture Capitalists, and there's a couple of them. But if you're going to get taxpayer dollars, there should be some work to it. You should have to get in a car. And the venture capital cohorts in this state have not proven that they're going to get to Representative Miller's or Representative Garofalo's district, because Dakota County doesn't get anything in this particular bill. It's the way this bill is worded, it's a $15 million a year boon to Western Hennepin County. And we rushed something through last year or 2 years ago when I had this particular, I mean, you could go on the record, because we keep these records 100 years, and almost everything I've said today, I said 2 years ago. And no one took it upon themselves to actually start requesting and asking the questions. So what, do you want to try and do something to make sure that it doesn't just go to those five cities on the Western Hennepin County?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Well, I guess I look at this issue differently than you do, Representative Mahoney. I don't see this as a boon to those individuals. I see it as a boon to every individual that would not be able to get investors to invest without this tax credit. I look at Chad and I say, without this program in place, he would not be able to develop and expand by me. Without this. So you're not helping out those people on the Gold Coast, as you call it, or the Crescent Coast. You're helping guys like him that wouldn't be able to walk in a bank and get a loan. They have to look for investors from other areas. And that's what he's been able to do in order to start his business. And I would hate to think that because we feel that a certain area of the state of Minnesota is benefiting more than others, that we would tell somebody like Chad and the innovative mind that he has that he needs to go elsewhere and that he needs to go to another state. As he mentioned earlier in his testimony, he has friends with very bright minds that are looking at Palo Alto and other states because they offer really generous plans to help them get their start. So it's not the investors that you're helping out here. It's the small-time operators like him that just want to take the dream, the idea that they have, and expand it and hopefully benefit here, the state of Minnesota, with the jobs, with the income that comes with it, and everything else that we get from those resources. Mm-hmm. When you look across the state and the Medtronics of the world, the Boston Scientifics, all of the plastic, I can't tell you how many small shops that are smaller than this room right here, that they're developing the next plastic that will revolutionize how we look at those issues. That's all happening here in this state, and it's thanks to programs like the Angel Investor Tax Credit. Without that, those little small-time operators wouldn't be able to do it, and instead they either go to another state or not even innovate at all. And I think that's a travesty.
Representative Miller.
Back to me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think to an extent I can help with Representative Mahoney's kind of question raised, because I too have, I mean, that is a dilemma there. And I don't necessarily have the complete answer, but I think we can put it in the right direction. So I took a bunch of notes while he was talking, so I'll try to be brief, but please bear with me as I kind of jump around with a little bit. I'm from Greater Minnesota. I'm from right by Wilmer. And I've actually worked some in this angel investment program with some companies out there, Midwest Technology Campus, which has been very successful mm-hmm. out there, and some other people. And we've learned some things that I think are the questions you're raising now is exactly, I mean, there's of course a reason why it's happening, but I think I can address some of the reasons. So those are a couple of the notes. The nature of the Greater Minnesota investors, by and large, are going to be farmers, semi-retired farmers, people that have had businesses for many years. And when they look at their investment dollars, one of the challenges is they tend to invest it back into their farming operations. Okay, so when we've worked with farmers out there trying to work with this angel investment, they kind of like it, kind of don't. There might be something about the mechanism, for example, of what would make this more appealing to some investor out there versus the investor that's maybe in the suburbs. I'm not saying there is, but that would be one place to look. For the investors that are in more towards the cities, one of the challenges that we have in Greater Minnesota is by far and away the technologies that need investment are ag-related, and investors tend not to like, from the suburbs, tend not to like to put money into ag-related investments. So that's, there again, one of the challenges. I think the mechanism of how, and this is the part that I don't remember because it's been a couple of years, but the nature of how the angel investment tax credit is structured, when they've tried to form some groups where you get people that put in maybe $25,000 apiece or things like that, it's problematic, and I don't remember why, but it isn't because they don't have the money or they don't want to do it. There's some sort of thing, and Representative, you may be able, Mahoney, you may be able to address that. But one of the things that I want to encourage you that has been positive with the investment out there and what I've seen with angel investment with the companies that I've worked with, angel investment is not the same as venture capital. It's similar, but it's not the same. It's oftentimes a bridge towards maybe venture capital. But the angel investment is not only, it's a good introduction in a way that you can get people the first step in, because venture capital is very hard to get, and if someone manages to get it with a young company, they oftentimes lose their company. That's the way that it happens. And so I would encourage us to make sure that we continue and grow this angel investment opportunity. Even if it's going through growing pains right now in the state of Minnesota, that doesn't mean scrap it, that doesn't mean limit it. We just need to find the better ways to utilize it. If we can figure out how to address these things with Greater Minnesota, of how investors out there are more inclined to do it, or people are more inclined to invest in Greater Minnesota, I don't think you're going to see this disparity. I think it just needs to be improved a little bit.
With that, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I want to thank you for bringing this forward. This is a great program. I think of some of the business that are out there. A lot of them started in the garage. I know a number of them that started in the garage, and one of them has become one of the largest and companies in the world. It's called Apple Computer. Without programs like this, that would have been in Minnesota, people might not have invested in a company like that. Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, same deal. Started out in a small shop. They were able to get people to invest in it. Without people to invest in, these companies would not be there. I do know one company in Minnesota that actually, the item that was invented and produced actually started in my county. Now they're a worldwide company, privately funded, but they got people to invest in them and were able to help them. Without programs like these, like this St. Angel Credit Program, a lot of these companies might not have even got started. We have many of them in this country, in this state, that have come about because of this program. Do some of them fail? Absolutely. That's the nature of business. And as far as Representative Mahoney's issue, where he talks about all the money going to one area, in greater Minnesota, there's not a lot of people with capital like that available. And a lot of times the person with the entrepreneur that's trying to do this thing, they have to find people that are willing to invest. They have to put together a program to do it. And it's not easy for that as well as trying to get their business started. But without a program like this, we could lose a lot of jobs. And that's what's the last thing we need. We need to grow this economy. And programs like this actually, in the long run, grow the economy, and we'll get our investment back.
Oh, yeah, but I just want to correct a few things that have been said here, Mr. Chair. And I'll be quick.
Okay. Got to get tourism in here.
Medtronic, Boston Sci, 3M, Ecolab, Apple, who were all started without angel investment credits. They were all started without angel investment credit. As a matter of fact, 19 of the 19 Fortune 500 companies in the state were started without angel investment credits. Actually, I think there is somewhere north of 60 Fortune 1000 companies in this state. None of them was started with angel investment tax credits. And to your concern about Greater Minnesota and this helping them, you know what happens to Greater Minnesota ideas because of this credit and going to Hennepin County? They move to Hennepin County. You're losing jobs because of this out in Greater Minnesota. And until we actually sit down and have a willingness to force the issue, unless you have a campus like they do out in Willmar, where you have a large investor, and I've been out there and I've toured it a couple of times, you are going to continue to have these people, these entrepreneurs, move to Minnesota. And to Representative Anderson's concern about losing bright entrepreneurs to the state, to San Francisco or to Massachusetts, we have consistently lost a half a dozen to a dozen of the top 10% of our engineering and medical research fields to these other care areas, not just for the last year, not for the last decade, but for the last 20. And you can go to the U of M, go through their alumni association, because I've had to do this, and you will find that many of them move because they don't like the weather, they want to get their graduate degree. There's a whole series of reasons, but we still get our fair share at $15 million right now. And until they fix the problem and the venture capitalists or angel investors learn how to get in a car and drive, how about just to St. Paul? I'd be happy with St. Paul. The East Metro, it's only 20 minutes. I really would. But I'm trying to be magnanimous and get to all of Minnesota. I'm not really in favor of expanding this particular credit until the investors start proving that they're willing to go up to Representative Sundin's district or anyone's district, Representative Green's district. Hey, Representative Green, you have smart people up in your district? That's a nod. I'm going to go yes. So anyhow, I'm done. I'll get another shot at this. There's another bill I got to ask about too. Yeah,
we'll go on from there. Seeing no more questions, I renew my motion to have House File 65 pass and be sent to Jobs and Energy Committee. All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Okay, motion passes. Now we have House File 66, I believe. Yeah. Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. What this bill does is it gets rid of the sunset on the angel investor tax credit. I think based upon its usage, you can tell popularity of what this means. To help out Representative Mahoney, Mr. Olson just informed me that his company is in St. Paul. So the trend is going your way. So this is a good thing. Just ask for your support. It seems silly that we come back every year and extend the sunset when we can just eliminate it at this point and have it move forward. So just ask for your support.
Representative Norton had her hand up first.
It was just basically a question, Mr. Chair. And I wondered, when we talked about this bill a year or so ago, it was considered a successful program, which I agree that it is. But we also had some questions about, you know, at some point a market becomes saturated when other states start doing the same thing. And so I guess I'm wondering if you've talked with the department. Are they comfortable lifting the sunset? So that's my question.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Norton. I have not had a conversation with them on their belief of whether it should be extended or not. This is a bill that I've carried the last two cycles. What I found serving on the Tax Committee is every year we come back and we have to put more money into the program and do that battle over and over again. I think that our time would be better spent in maybe addressing some of the concerns that Representative Mahoney has highlighted and how we can get more participation in greater Minnesota. And perhaps some of that's part of the concern that we have for greater Minnesota investors is that they see this as just a year-to-year program, and maybe they're looking for some more longevity. And this would certainly give that certainty and longevity that investors are looking to help out these small mom-and-pop operations.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Norton.
I can understand that there are times when you want something you can count on. I'm not sure this type of investment really falls in that that same line of needing that security from year to year. I can see more from the young entrepreneurs hoping that there's a pot of money to help them. So from that end, I can see where they would see this as a benefit. But I think for some of the reasons that you just outlined, I question lifting the sunset. We've talked a lot on your side of the aisle as well as on mine, Representative Anderson, about the things just having a forever, never-ending cycle and timeline, and that sometimes there is wisdom in coming back and reviewing things to make sure that they are working properly, that rural Minnesota is having its issues addressed. The bill, this is the first time this rural piece has just kicked in. We don't know if it's going to work or not work. And so I sort of like the idea that we come back and revisit it, and it doesn't take very long. An hour, and it probably seems never ending to the people sitting at the table there, of time to discuss a bill to see whether indeed it's working and to have that testimony. So while I understand and agree that this has been a worthwhile venture, I still like the idea of coming back and being able to review and change the bill as needed. And so can you address again if there really is an advantage to this? I'm really struggling with that.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that Mr. Lacey and Mr. Olson right now are cursing the people that asked them to come and speak today as they're like, what did I just step into? But do appreciate their time because we know it's very valuable, and I think that we can learn a lot from the people that are actually utilizing these programs and are helping to grow our economy here in the state of Minnesota. I generally agree with you that we need to have, you know, annual review. That's not to say that this program would not be reviewed, because serving on the Tax Committee, all of these issues get reviewed on an annual basis, regardless of whether or not they are have a sunset provision to them. But what I'm saying is it gives us greater continuity, greater security for those investors that look not just at Minnesota, but they're looking at other states and how they put their money. And if they have a knowledge of at least we could count on it for a biennium, that in a two-year period that this is going to be there. I think that that would be helpful for us as a state in marketing our tools. I think it helps DEED in their marketing. I know that there have been changes in state law on other provisions that DEED manages, and it's hard for them to keep up with those changes, even on their website. I mean, they've had things on their website that we haven't had for, you know, 6 months or better. So I think that it's a constant challenge for them to keep up with that and to promote what Minnesota has to offer to all of those innovative minds that are out there.
With that, Representative Lean. You're one. Lean, we have Lean and Miller and Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief.
And Mahoney.
Representative Anderson, I just wanted to make a quick comment that, you know, especially if we're taking a look at eliminating the sunset on this, something that may be beneficial is to allow the money going out to Greater Minnesota women-owned businesses to stay on a 50% basis of the pot, so that that keeps up with the appropriation. Or, you know, even if we take a look at this and say, okay, you know, so it's X number of these dollars went back into the pot because they weren't being used by Greater Minnesota businesses, you know, that may give us a better indication of, say, allocating a third of the money or 40% of the money. Quick comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, we have Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this will be very brief, but I think addressing this bill, or this bill addresses one of the concerns that Representative Mahoney has. I'm now remembering a little bit of some of the discussion that we've had out there, and the people that want to invest, the smaller groups, the typically they're like a $25,000 minimum, but the smaller investors that you're talking about, these are groups that get together and provide this pool of money, and so if there is a sunset, they're not exactly sure what to do with that, with their money. Another thing that keep in mind that there are companies that may be investigating angel investment money, but everything doesn't happen in a month sort of thing when you're developing a business. There's time that takes, and you kind of move close to the investment time, you move away, you move close, and you move away. And having that knowledge that the angel investment money can be there in the future can alleviate some of the concerns for the investor and the business that's trying to grow.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm sure many of you around this table is more savvy in the business industry than I am. But as much as I am really excited about the opportunity that you had to start a business, I am still kind of uncomfortable with the fact that, you know, we have created a process where investors, millionaires, but you have at least $1 million to invest, right, to get the tax credit, that you are investing in someone in a small business, not so much because they may have a great idea, and maybe it is, but maybe it's also because you get to benefit from that with a 25% tax credit. And so, you know, I'm wavering, you know, and maybe that's the way our world rolls, right? If you want to make money, maybe that's the way it is. But in real time, can you help me what it costs for you to start up, what you invested, and what that looks like in a 25% tax credit?
Just walk through the math, or?
Yeah, just a little bit. Real quick, can you do it real quick?
Well, I invested $225,000. I think the tax credit amount is 56 or something like that. All of the funds, with a small portion that Chad paid to himself, were invested in software development, marketing, test marketing, you know, and basically building and growing the business, employees. if I could, though, on one of your comments that you made, I would add, for what it's worth, I'm a relatively young guy, but I have relatively old children. My girlfriend and I got pregnant at 18. I spent 3 years on welfare, buying groceries with WIC coupons before I moved to Minnesota and ultimately started my own business. I didn't have any angel tax credit or any credit to help me out. Had I had one, I may have been able to get here faster and invest in companies like Chad faster. But the reality of it is there are people who, you know, they didn't get a handout to get where they are. And I'm glad to give back to somebody like Chad because, you know, he's a kid with a bright idea, but, you know, I introduced him to a dozen people that I know they didn't want to invest. They weren't ready. So there's a real benefit to this program. And in terms of the math and kind of the dollars of it, all of the money that was spent by that business was spent with other businesses. You know, so it stays in the economy here locally.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Mahoney,
For the last time today.
On this bill.
We will. I am.
The audience wants to testify yet.
I am. I find it funny that we're trying to get rid of the clawback. It's not a clawback. The look back and the end date to these things. It's not year to year. It's every 4 years. It was a drop dead demand from Governor Pawlenty that there be a look back in this. That was fully supported by another Republican legislator that, although she was rather tall and skinny, I won't mention her name, she was very clear that unless that was the case, that, and there was another word that had to come out of the bill, that the Republicans couldn't support it. So I actually think because when we get to revisit these things, we get to demand information from the investors. In and of itself, I support the angel investment credit. I do.
Sure.
It needs to be fixed. You know, it came out as a principle of the best deal would get the best money. And now we're doing social engineering with this angel investment tax credit. You know, and I'm just as guilty as the rest. But I, hopefully, this bill goes away. That takes away the, what word am I looking for? The end date on it. The sunset. Because we should look at this kind of gift to the investor company, the investor world. Quick history. 20 years ago, venture capitalists did the angel investing. They got in early in order to get a leg up on their venture buys. And then they took the company from young people like Mr. Olson. They did. They literally, you know, if you end up hopefully with 10 or 15% of your business, I think that's a great deal. But 20 years ago, the angel people were the venture capitalists. And they moved the bar and said, we want the state to step in. And that's what we're doing, is we're covering the nut for the venture capitalists. I'm okay with that. But we should look at it every 4 years, not every year, every 4 years, and that should be enough time for a small investor. And we tried to fix that last year, but it got too complicated because what you have to do is you have to get it down to someone making $85,000 a year that can put $8,000 in and then put all the tax ramifications in. And it's very complicated to get it down to someone making $75,000 to $85,000. And I worked on that. I think it's a good deal to do, but 4 years from now we should do it, or 2017. So again, I like the angel investment credit. I just don't like your bills.
Okay, with that, we have a Genevieve Plumador that would like to speak on this issue, and then we'll have a vote on it.
I'll be brief, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Genevieve Plumador here with Life Science Alley. I was here last week, so I'll just get straight to the point. I just wanted to be on the record to say that we're supportive of both of Representative Anderson's bills. Minnesota took important steps in improving the life cycle for our small startups by passing the Angel Investment Tax Credit into law. It's been a highly successful economic development tool, and it has leveraged significant investments in Minnesota. We published a report this year that showed that investment in the life sciences, which include diagnostics, medical devices, health IT, and pharmaceuticals, rose 65% last year in 2014. That's up by $81 million to a total of $430 million in investments. And that also includes angel investments. And a part of our metrics, we ask the investors to disclose what was the motivation for them to invest in those companies. And besides great ideas and new technologies, one of the items that came up time and time again was the incentive of having the angel investment tax credit as a part of the package that Minnesota could offer them to make the investments here. And just to reiterate, our companies, it takes anywhere from 8 to 10 years before the companies are actually profitable, and the pathway to profitability is on average, it takes about $100 million just in an initial investment to get a product off the ground. And then you add that an additional 5 to 10 years of FDA process and FDA rules and regulations. These companies, it's a long life cycle to get to that point. So, again, just to be on the record that we're supportive of both bills, and this will continue Minnesota's legacy in entrepreneurship. Thank you.
Very well, thank you. Now we'll vote on House File 65. 66. And we're going to pass that on to Jobs and Energy Affordability Committee. And all in favor of that, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No. No.
Passed. Thank you very much. And next we have Mr. Edmund, Tourism Minnesota. He got back in time, Representative Dill. Anybody wants to go fishing, go up to Canada with David Dill.
We got to go through Minnesota first.
Yeah, we got a few choice stops, right? Crane Lake?
Yep.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is John Edmond. I'm the director of Explore Minnesota Tourism, and I really appreciate this opportunity to provide you with a brief overview of our agency. What I'm going to talk about today, I think you have a copy of my PowerPoint. I won't go through all of the details in there, but I want to kind of just give you an overview of tourism in Minnesota, the economic impact, talk a little bit about what we've been doing for the last year, what we've actually accomplished as a result of that, and then where we're going in the future. So I guess I just wanted to start out talking about our industry itself, the base of tourism, which is incredibly a diverse industry, representing all sorts of businesses and organizations, from small to large, all throughout Minnesota. I think it's appropriate that this overview is in this committee because we do connect communities and represent communities throughout greater Minnesota and throughout the entire state of Minnesota. So it impacts every county. And it's also what we do in promoting tourism really helps promote that concept of a state, of a place to live, work, and play. I think it ties into jobs, ties into economic development, ties into quality of life. And people often that come and travel here realize what an incredible state this is, and then they come back to, in fact, start a business. It is a business in tourism in Minnesota. It's a $13 billion industry. One of the figures that we like to talk about, 17% of all sales tax in Minnesota comes from the leisure and the hospitality industry. And our sales tax that's been generated from leisure and hospitality has grown 54% in the last 10 years compared to 29% for all other industries. 250,000 jobs, 11% of all private sector employment. And as you can see from this map, every county in the state is impacted to one degree or another. And the jobs themselves, they represent everything from entry-level jobs, service jobs, to higher-paying executive positions. And it's also important, when I go to some communities in greater Minnesota, they really feel the impact of what's happening in tourism. And it's not just those tourism-related businesses. It's those other businesses, those secondary businesses, whether it's the insurance company or the printing company or the car dealerships. They, too, benefit from the foundation of a strong tourism economy. When you look at our season, where the travelers are, spring, summer is the big season, probably no surprise there. But winter and fall represent about a quarter of all traveler expenditures, and of course the uncertain spring is also representing about 14% of our expenditures in travel and tourism. Our industry has grown to the $13 billion industry, as I mentioned earlier. Not talking about the sales tax, just talking about the expenditures. They grew 49% in the last 10 years. And it's also worth noting that international is growing substantially as well. We have about 270,000 international travelers to Minnesota every year. That doesn't even include Canada in terms of the number of overseas travelers, and they spend more than domestic travelers. And we also have a lot of direct airline service to Minnesota that's increasing, that's creating a lot of opportunities for the state. The total of number of seats on international flights grew actually 17% in 2014, so it's growing, and we are becoming a global player in the international marketplace. As an agency, Explore Minnesota, we exist to promote travel to Minnesota. We do that through advertising and PR and a lot of social, international, and other efforts. And we basically reach millions of travelers every year to travel to Minnesota. Our goals is obviously to inspire to create inspiring advertising and promotion programs. We develop a lot of partnerships. We work with a lot of others to try to extend our reach. Do things online, which is a lot of where the activity is. But we also have phone counselors, and we deal with printed materials and in-person promotions. We also promote international group and sports marketing as well. We're relatively a small agency, about 60 full and part-time staff. We have offices throughout Greater Minnesota in Duluth, Thief River Falls, Mankato, and St. Paul. We operate six staffed welcome centers throughout Greater Minnesota. We're organized into three basic units: brand strategy, operations, and partner relations. The other thing I think it's important that makes us kind of unique is we're guided by a tourism council, a 28-person tourism council that represents all aspects of the tourism industry all throughout Minnesota, whether they be resorts, whether they be convention bureaus, chamber members, or the like. We also have four legislators that serve on our council as well that provides advice and guidance to the programs and our strategies. Our budget is about $28 million for the biennium. That's also about, we generate in addition to that about $1 million in revenue. This is actual cash, and that's in each year. And we also partner a lot, as I mentioned, with other organizations. We actually have to bring money in from the private sector. Last year, I think we brought in cash and in-kind close to $8 million to help supplement our program. So really try to work with the private sector to extend our reach and to match what our competitors are doing. And I'll get to that in a second. In terms of our operating expenses, the majority is being put into programs, promotions, that's advertising, about a third into staff, and about 7% into grants and other services. Our historical spending, this slide kind of shows where we have been over the years, at least over in the last 10 years, and we did get a significant increase last biennium, which is close to maybe where we were four bienniums ago. We're still less than a lot of our competitors, but this is allowing us to do some things that we haven't been able to do before. And I did want to just kind of ground us into what our competitors are doing. $28 million over a biennium is granted a lot of money to promote travel and tourism, but when you look at what our competitors are doing, what this slide shows you is what our main competitors are doing in terms of their budget. If you can read that, the little purple line on the bottom, which shows the little uptick on the bottom, that's Minnesota. So we're actually on the bottom. The other states here being shown in this graph are our main competitors of Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, and South Dakota. So we still have a ways to go to be competitive and to make Minnesota in the mindset of travelers today. When we did our marketing in the past, before we got this increase, it was based on the concept of more to explore in Minnesota, promoting all the different things you could find throughout Greater Minnesota and the activities and events. But with our new money, we decided we needed to do something a little bit different. We needed to really reach travelers in a unique way, in a way that's going to connect and resonate with them. And in order to do that, one of the first things that we did is we did some focus research, and we asked consumers in our target markets, what do you think about Minnesota? And I just wanted to share with you a quick little snippet of some of those videos, because it helped guide us in where we are right now.
When I travel, I like to go to places that have a diverse range of things because I'm not the type of guy that likes to just sit on a beach.
Well, when we choose vacation spots, some of the things we like to do is to see what kind of attractions are there.
We'll go anywhere that looks interesting and safe and scenic and outdoorsy.
When I think of a vacation in Minnesota, I kind of imagine just a really cold, dreary climate and a bunch of people that sound like they came out of Fargo.
I've never been there, and all I've heard here is it's really cold there.
I think of cold and fishing.
It's up north, and you don't really hear a lot about it.
I can't say that I've really had any desire to go.
Ouch. You know, when we first looked at that, yeah, that was a bit of a blow into what we thought of as we had as a state. But what it told us is that we don't really have a product problem, we have an awareness problem. People don't know the kind of opportunities for travel that we have in greater Minnesota and throughout the state. So we came up with a new campaign that really focused on the unique and the authentic experiences, the thing that you can get only in Minnesota. And that really became sort of our rallying cry. We built a campaign around a hashtag, only in Minnesota, and we wanted people to start talking to each other about the unique things that are found here, whether it's the headwaters of the Mississippi River, whether it's the Lake Superior, Lanesboro, the Guthrie Theater, you name it. We have things in this state that we need to start talking proudly about to others because they're only found here, and let's start sharing that with others and have them share it themselves. So with our new resource, this is our markets had primarily been Minnesota and the surrounding states, but with our new resources, we were able to expand a bit. We were able to reach out to some of those new markets, whether it's in Kansas City or Denver or in Chicago. We've done some television in some of these key markets. We've done some outdoor advertising that we've never been able to do before, and we really upped our efforts into digital. We use a lot of touch points. The interesting thing about this slide to me is if you take the digital and the search, nearly 50% of our promotion is digital. I mean, it's very different than when I first started this job where, you know, it was television and printed materials and things like that. The digital space is really a place that we are playing. And then the only Minnesota hashtag really plays into that. And I'll talk about that in a second. Mm-hmm. But I did want to share with you a couple of the television spots. We did about four different spots this spring, summer, talking about the things that you find only in Minnesota. These are a couple of 30-second spots. We did these with actually some Minnesota musicians from greater Minnesota, I might add, to talk about the unique things that we have here in Minnesota.
Take a trip. Find the trail. Look out. Call some friends. Hello. Come on, bring it in. Look at you. This is going to be good. Look at that. Meet your hero. See a bird. Nice leather. Nice wool. How'd they make that? Oh, that's how. Play with the puppets. Conquer your fear. Read to the chickens. Shake, break. Laugh. Run. Jump. Smile. Look up. And discover a world that's only in Minnesota.
Here's what I'm gonna
take a trip. Pass some water. Pass some trees. Wait, don't you dare pass that. Find a course. Get out. Look around. No, really, look around. Take hold. Take a breath. Jump. Climb. Seek your fortune. Laugh. Pinch yourself, because this is happening. And it might not ever happen again. Well, not like this. Because this kind of trip happens only in Minnesota.
And then, Mr. Chairman and members, the third one I wanted to show you was one that was a little bit more of a metro focus, but just to want to emphasize how our job is to promote the entire state, and we want to make sure that everyone is represented in how we position Minnesota.
Take a trip. Dress up. Go out. Get artsy. Get foodie. Get a royal welcome. Do some more. Sample some wine. Sample some cheese. Ooh, that looks good too. Better sample it. Hey, they save some seats. Great seats. Good times. Good oysters. What's next? How about here? And here. And there. And cheers. Smile. It's modern. It's classic. It's totally you. And it's only in Minnesota.
So those are some of the spots we did last spring, and we're going to continue those in rotation with a few other additional spots this spring, summer. But we also did a lot of digital out of home, as we call it. And the thing that's most interesting to me on this is we used a lot of the social media photography that consumers have just provided and used that as some of our digital imagery versus anything that was created by an ad agency. We also did some takeovers for some awareness advertising, takeover some train stations in Chicago. We did some building wraps in Denver, talking about the things that you find only in Minnesota. We did some promotions around some major events, and we will continue to do that because this was some things that we did with the All-Star Game. And it, to me, it's not as much about, you know, selling tickets, about the national attention that Minnesota can get from high-profile events like this, and we want to try to take advantage of it to promote Minnesota. We also redid our website this last year to make it more content-heavy, more visual, and to talk more inspirationally about the things to do in Minnesota. And we also recreated our website to make it more digital, friendly for mobile users. This is where we're seeing our primary growth. People are coming to our site through mobile phones, through tablets, and things like that. And so we had to make sure that our site was responsive to that. Now this fall we did a program. We brought some people from out of state to talk about their travels and their experiences in Minnesota, in northern Minnesota, in southern Minnesota, in the metro. We had some families, some couples, an individual, and they were sharing a lot of their experiences, not only through their social sites, but also on our site. And it was really fun to see the engagement of consumers on those travel experiences. Now, I just want to talk very briefly about how was the summer. I talked a little bit about some of our advertising this fall and summer. We do a survey every year of our industry to ask how is tourism, you know, how's occupancy, how's revenue, how's their health. And this year was the sixth consecutive year of continuous growth. We've seen improvements in these numbers every year. In terms of occupancy, nearly 75% said that occupancy was the same or up in 2014 compared to 13. Revenue was also up. A lot more said it was up than they said it was the same or down. And then this slide, I think, is really telling to me in terms of the financial health of our industry, with a vast majority of those responding indicating it's stable, positive, or growing. And so that's really, I think, what we're all hoping to achieve. I also want to just share, because we're doing so much with social, the incredible growth that we've had in social. Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, 292%. That's really where we're seeing a lot of engagement. And again, it's not about the ads that we create. It's about you talking to your friend or your neighbor about the things in Minnesota, and that's where a lot of people are communicating. And so we're really proud of that. We didn't just look at the website traffic. We didn't look at the social or even some of the anecdotal. We also then went to a third party to do a return on investment study to find out what are we getting for our dollars? What are you getting for the dollars that you invest in travel and tourism? Is it making an impact? And so we looked at this in terms of both our the markets, the traditional markets we had, the old markets, as well as the new markets that we're trying to reach out to. And took a look at, first of all, is the awareness up in these markets? Do people know about Explore Minnesota? Do they know about this state? In the old markets, the awareness was higher than it is in the new markets, but that really shouldn't be surprising because we haven't been in those markets before. But again, combined, we're seeing over half of the people aware of our advertising. But this slide is the one that really, I think, should resonate, because what we do with this study is ask consumers, did you travel as a result of any advertising that you saw from Explore Minnesota? And did you take a trip, and how much money did you spend? And so based on the investment that we made, ad investments combined old markets and new markets, this generated $320 million in new incremental spending in travel and tourism, or taxes of $29.7 million. Combined, it's about a 6-to-1 return on investment on our dollars, which is really, really good, showing that we are having some impact, that people are traveling, and we're getting a return. Beyond that, though, we asked about consumers about what is your image of Minnesota and the impact of advertising last year to this year. And the only thing you really need to know about these numbers, that's kind of the difference between aware and unaware. Just look at the 2014, the bigger numbers. And people, you know, are a lot more aware that there's more to do and see, and it's exciting, and children or families would like it. But a place I would really enjoy visiting, that's the number that really kind of sticks out to me, that, you know, hey, people are, they didn't know about Minnesota, but they may be thinking about traveling here. And so we are having a bit of an impact there, and we want to continue that. Longer term, you know, in terms of the impact of people that may not have traveled as a result of our advertising, but they had indicated to us they do want to travel, 1.9 million in tenders to travel. And so that, I think, really also resonates well for Minnesota for the future. Now, I just, before I get into the spring-summer stuff, just briefly mention winter. We're doing some promotion. Winter's a long season, and we need to promote winter activities no matter what the weather, whether it is snow or not snow. And so we're doing a lot of banner advertising like this, involving a lot of rich media, trying to get people out and about for festivals and events and activities, things to do with snow, things to do with families, etc. And I wanted to show you a couple of TV spots, because these really help, you know, illustrate a little bit more colorfully about how we are positioning Minnesota to consumers this particular winter.
Take a trip. Find some friends. Find a seat. Find your power animal. Hey, girl, head back. Get a lift. Take a drop. Wait, settle. You betcha. This is awesome. So is this, and this, and that, and are you kidding me? Nope. Kick off your shoes, or buy some new ones. Have a beer. Catch a show. Start a fight. And make everyone wish they were only in Minnesota.
And this is one last one I'm going to show you for winter.
Take a trip. Take a day. Take a week. Take whatever you need. Hit the powder. Hit the pool. Nice. Do this. Do that. Do the other thing. And then, do a recap. Alright, get back out there. Skate the lakes. Warm up. Down a s'more. See that thing. And those guys. And just, wow. Have the winter you've always wanted. Only in Minnesota.
So that's kind of where we've been in the spring, this last summer, the fall, and then currently in the winter. And as we move forward into the next spring, summer, talking to my tourism council, they basically are giving us the charge to continue the momentum, to focus on jobs, focus on revenue. We need to continue to strengthen. We're going to plan on continuing to strengthen our market penetration in some of these markets that we've been in the past. We just can't be there one and done. To raise awareness of the diverse opportunities of the state. We want to do a lot more in PR, because we're finding that through PR you can really impact travelers in a way even beyond that you can with social or for advertising. We want to increase our efforts to make Minnesota a global player in the international marketplace, and be sure that in everything we're doing, we're promoting all parts of Minnesota. So, Mr. Chairman, members, that pretty much gives you a quick overview of what we've been doing and what we're planning on doing in the future, and I'd be ready to answer any questions that you may have.
Well, thank you for your great presentation. I'm sure there's a lot of questions. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the good job. You have quoted before, and maybe you said it in this presentation and I missed it, what our return on investment from state dollars to our economy is from tourism. Do I remember it was 7-1 from other briefings? Is that a number that you know?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, it's actually, I think what you're referring to is an 8-1 return on investment. Oh. That's for every dollar we invest, we get $8 back. That's the figure that we had used in the past. When I look at this new return on investment study, what it shows is, again, based on a new survey, is an 8-1 return on investments on our traditional markets. On our newer markets, a little less than that. I think it's like 5-1 or something like that. 4 or 5-1 for a combined 6-1. So what it tells me is that we're getting a good return on the markets we've been. There's an opportunity to attract new travelers, but we can't just be there and then get out. We need to continue that and hopefully can raise that up to the level of our current markets. But it's about 8-1, Representative Dill.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so in looking at that chart with the various states, and I don't remember which one, but South Dakota and maybe right. North Dakota on there and Wisconsin, I don't remember when I'm not looking in the I haven't looked in the packet yet, but do they experience the same rate of return on their investment that we get on ours? And where I'm going with this is it seems to me, in my 12 years here, beginning my 13th, that the tourism budget has been one of the most least likely loved budgets in the state. For a state that's blessed from Fairmont to Roseau and to Grand Marais to Austin and beyond, with all these resources, we don't love them very much from the state perspective. We want people to love them, but we don't seem to get the resources invested. So my question is, the other states are investing more, as shown by your lines of investment. Do they experience the same kind of returns on their investments?
Director Edmund.
Or are they just burning money?
No, I'm sure that they're getting fairly similar. We actually one time did sort of an analysis of ROI studies, and they're a little bit across the board. Some are better, some are worse, and it depends on the year. And it also depends on the vendor. When we did that ROI study, we did an RFP to hire a vendor. I think it's fairly similar, but the thing that is sort of interesting to me about those other states that I showed, whether it's Wisconsin or Illinois, North Dakota, South Dakota, et cetera, their funding is based on a statewide lodging tax. We don't have that. I have to basically justify what we do every year to you in the legislature, and you make a decision, are you doing a good job or not, and we'll look at the priorities and figure out if you need any money. But in our states, it's a little bit more automatic, whether it's a statewide lodging tax or sometimes gaming tax, sometimes car rental tax, et cetera. So the funding mechanisms in every state is a little different, but it's a little bit more on autopilot, so that's why they're continuing to grow. We were flat for many years, and the state had some budget problems, and tourism was not continued. But then now, last biennium, we were able to increase, and so that's great, and we just hope to be able to continue to hold on to that.
Representative Barrett. You got another one?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in those states, we've got a 3% with maybe a couple of exceptions on lodging tax. That's a local option, as I recall.
Right.
And there's probably a couple of exceptions. Duluth maybe is one. And there are exceptions. But what is their lodging tax? What is their local lodging tax look like in other states? I heard you say that they have a statewide lodging tax that goes then to probably a fund that then gets funding their tourism budget. What do their local lodging taxes look like? Because I'm sure they're local people. I know that the Lemon Chamber of Commerce, where we went pheasant hunting, is getting money from taxes over in South Dakota. So how does that look? And should we be evaluating having some more dedicated for something that gets a great return on that? I mean, I have invested in it. I'm on the end of that program. I see it. I like it. But as a state, I think we should be looking at investing more. I've always thought that, and you know I've always thought that. But I just question why we just can't get the job done. Why can't we love Minnesota like people love to love Minnesota?
Director Epin.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Minnesota is unique. We're not like other states. The amount of lodging tax in other states is probably fairly comparable, but it goes to a different source, a mm-hmm. state source. And sometimes they even then grant it out back to the local communities. The way that we're structured is with the local option lodging tax, which is the 3% local option lodging tax, community can decide whether or not they want to tax themselves, and then they collect those dollars and use it for their local promotion purposes. And years ago, when I first became director, we were looking at different funding mechanisms, and that was one of the things that we looked at. But the reality is, that's in place, and the industry does a lot of great work with that, and our funding mechanism is just different. So we've decided not to really go that direction.
Okay. Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Edmund, I just have a couple questions for you. First one is, it relates to your budget, your $29 million budget. How much of that is spent on advertising, and then how much of that advertising is spent in the state as opposed to trying to get folks into the state from surrounding states?
Mr. Chairman, I think the percentage of that on advertising, if you looked at that one chart, it was about 60% on advertising and promotion. That doesn't mean that all that money goes through an ad agency. The bulk of it does. I think we're at about a $5 million ad agency budget, roughly. And don't quote me on that one. But that's about 60% is for advertising. I'm sorry, the second part of your question was?
So your $29 million budget, 64% roughly is for outreach, I guess. Right. I would call it outreach.
Promotion.
Promotion.
Oh, how much state and in-state?
How much state and out-of-state?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it has been probably about 50-50, 50% Minnesota, 50% out-state, but we're starting to increase that amount. To maintain, with our new dollars, we've decided we need to maintain our presence in Minnesota and the surrounding markets, but now we have an opportunity to get out to new markets. So we're not doubling down on the current markets. We're using those monies to put into to new markets, and that's our intention moving forward, too.
Sounds good. Mr. Chair, then another question regarding slide 20, page 21, you talk about the incremental taxes, return on investment, things like that. And you have a line called incremental visitor spending. Are those visitors, are they from Minnesota, or are they from outside of Minnesota? I'm just trying to get a sense, not really going anywhere with this, other than determining whether you feel that you could claim responsibility for someone from Chisago County, for example, spending money in another county, if that's part of what you feel would be a benefit to the state of Minnesota when we're just maybe trading, for lack of better words, trading dollars from one county to the next, or is all that incremental revenue coming from folks who are out of state, who may or may not normally come to Minnesota?
Well, Mr. Chair, referring to that particular slide, that return on investment study takes a look at travelers into two buckets. One is the new markets, which are farther away, so all of those so-called new markets are out-of-state travelers. And so the return on investment, the incremental spending on that one column that says new markets, that's all out of state. As far as the old markets, that's sort of a combination of Minnesota and the surrounding states. So probably about half of that is Minnesotans traveling throughout Minnesota, and the other half are non-residents coming into Minnesota. And Mr. Chair, if I could just add to that a little bit, is while I believe that our growth opportunities are in attracting non-residents because they stay longer and they spend more money. They come, they spend money, and they leave. That's great for all of us. But I think when you're talking about a lot of the resorters in greater Minnesota that depend on travel from the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area, we can't forget about that. It does move money around within the state, but it's really, really important when I talk to a lot of the resorters to make sure we get Minnesotans exploring the travel opportunities they have here in MSA.
Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just related to that, really the reason I was wondering about that, not the least of which is this is kind of some of what I do in the private sector is looking at marketing dollars and determine how successful they are. And not to bring up a can of worms, but you know, we did spend $350 million of state money on a Viking stadium because we felt that had some incremental business. And now you just said that we want Minnesota folks or Minneapolis folks to go up north. So just wondering how much we're competing against each other by spending money to get people to do something they would maybe do already, or would spend their money in a slightly different way, but it would still benefit Minnesota. So that's not a question for you, but it's really an observation that we do some things sometimes and are at contrary purposes. So my final question for you is something I'm just kind of curious about regarding your tagline, only in MN. To me, again, as a kind of a analyst, tell me about that and how it may or may not compete with your website of Explore Minnesota. I'm used to Explore Minnesota. It's got Explore, nice word, Minnesota spelled out. And then the hashtag only in MN, which you probably use more online than anything. It's a little bit shorter. You know, you Google, as I just did, only in MN, you get to Explore Minnesota. Tell me your thoughts about that and how it either supports or maybe in some cases might compete with, you know, Explore Minnesota.
Director Edmund.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's a really, really good question because we wrestled with that a little bit ourselves. But the only in MN, it's not a slogan per se, but it really has its use in the social media realm. So when people are talking to each other on Twitter, when they're talking to each other on Facebook, when they're talking to each other in all the in Pinterest, etc., the only in MN is this very simple way to get to engage people and to also then to categorize things, and we're finding tremendous use on that. It's not a website. And so then the website is exploreminnesota.com. It's all brought to you by Explore Minnesota. Right. But they're kind of two separate things that we believe aren't really competing.
Thank you. And with that, we have Representative O'Neill and then Representative Dill.
I just have a really quick clarification question. Thank you, Chair. And actually, in line with what Representative Barrett was asking, if you could just let us know on page 21, your incremental trips and so on chart, is that 1 year or 2 year? Is that for 2014 and 2013 or just 2014?
Victor.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is just the impact of our spring-summer advertising in 2014.
Thank you.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going in a whole different direction than where we've headed so far. One of the things that invariably happens to tourism is that the unknown comes back to bite us. And the most recent unknown, at least according to the resort communities, it wasn't unknown to those of us in 2011 that passed it and voted for it, the AIS sticker on a trailer. So my question is, and I've authored a bill to repeal that and to create another replacement because it's important that people know. How much involvement did tourism have with DNR in the development of that program? Because, I mean, Newton's law is, what is that, every action creates an equal and opposite reaction or something of that nature? That's going back a few days, Mr. Chairman.
When you were a young man?
Yeah, when I was much younger, yeah. What an opposite reaction that is going to have some effect, if not a large effect, on tourism. And let me give you an example of how it can be done. So it's no secret that I have business in Canada. And we got hit out of the clear blue sky by the Ministry of Ontario Natural Resources that they were going to require every single person that operated a boat, regardless of what state or country they were from, to have a boat operator's license. Before that ever got to the tourism industry, the Ontario Tourism Group was contacting us saying, this is how you're going to adapt. And it was like this huge upheaval until everybody realized, well, we're going to put it on our website, we're going to have the test on our website, we're going to call the people before they arrive and come on a reservation. When they make their reservation, they make their deposit, we call them. Do you have one from your home state? If you don't, how do we get you the test? And we were way out in front of that. I don't sense that on this sticker thing, the development of the department, you guys had any involvement in it. Maybe I'm wrong. So that's the question.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, no, we did not have any involvement in the initial legislation, requiring that sticker and the online testing and things like that. But as that was made available to us, we have been working with the Department of Natural Resources to try to communicate that. We put an ad in our fishing guide for this year that this is where you have to go to get your test kind of thing. But it is, frankly, creating a little bit of confusion, just not knowing if that program is going to continue or not. But right now, our responsibility is to follow the law that is on the books that says that you have to take that test if you have to take a book, take a boat. So if that changes, then we'll communicate the message appropriately.
Representative Dill.
Well, the problem with the whole thing is you can't follow the law because the test isn't online yet.
Right.
It's not been released by the DNR, and we have a July deadline. I was at the St. Paul Sportsman Show, which I've done for many years, and I had more people from Lake of the Woods coming to me and asking about how that their people were going to get through Minnesota to get to Lake of the Woods, Canadian side, than I had people coming to make reservations.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's a huge problem, and I see it as a major problem for our tourism. And we could spend a whole lot of money trying to get people to come to our state, but if they turn around because they fear some simple thing as taking a 15-minute course, I just think there should be some coordination. I'm not criticizing you. If DNR were in here, I'd be more critical of them in not reaching out to you
right.
more readily. So there's other things that are going to come along that happen. Firewood is an example. Did the Department of Natural Resources consult with you about the ability to buy and purchase firewood and who was licensed and who wasn't and how that could affect tourism or people coming to their deer shacks and everything like that, because that caused a big upheaval. There's another example that I just happened to think of out of Kaluska. So in the future, I think you ought to call them up on the phone, and this isn't a criticism of you, and say, what kind of bad things do you have coming our way? And let me try and help you with that. That's a Representative Wagenius statement. Let me try and help you with that.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, I appreciate that. And what I guess as the tourism director want to make sure that I can do is communicate a very clear and consistent message to consumers. In the case of AIS, it's a moving target. It's changing all the time, and that's the challenge for us. To what do we do? I mean, we all, I think particularly my industry, is very concerned about the protection of Minnesota lakes for current and future generations. But the laws that are on the books that they need to follow, we just need to be coordinated and clear to consumers to let them know what to expect. So I agree with you.
I could further editorialize, but I'll save you from that.
I did it earlier. You may as well tell it.
Hey, two best friends here. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Director. I would just shift gears a little bit. We're almost out of time anyway, but I was wondering on your chart on page 20 where your new markets are going south and west. Is there, in your studies, what did it show about trying to expand the market to the east?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative, we looked at that, and we're doing some things in Chicago that we haven't done before. I mean, that map doesn't really show our increased investment in Chicago. That is the biggest opportunity that we have right now. We do some things in Milwaukee we have for the years, and we're trying to expand that. That doesn't really show up in the map, per se, but we are doing increased investments in that. The problem with Chicago, particularly as a market, it's an incredibly expensive market, and there's so much competition. So we're kind of hard-pressed. We've looked at that. And one of the things we did when we were looking at our new markets, we did some listening sessions with our industry. We went around Minnesota and say, who are your customers? Where are they coming from? And where should we be in place? And that's how we kind of came up with that map. A lot of them, each particular part of the industry had a different consumer, and we tried to balance all of that, whether it's the west or the east. But the east opportunities are primarily to Milwaukee and Chicago, and we really haven't been able to expand beyond there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so the reason you haven't been able to expand is money, apparently, that you don't have the market out there. I did some marketing for a while and ran a business for many years. And even though it may be more expensive and there's a lot of competition, there's a reason for that. And that, if you've got, you know, many times more people in an area, even if it's more expensive, you may get bigger bang for your buck. I know for myself, when I go on vacation, I like to go out to Wyoming and Montana. And it looks like we're going to try to switch back and forth there. But those states are less populated, you know, per square mile than we are. And so I was just wondering if there was any reason you're telling me it's just, you know, the money to go east, or?
It's Mr. Chairman, Representative, it's primarily, yes, it is the dollars, but it's also potential of travelers in our industry. Some of our industry were not all that excited about going in Chicago because they did feel that it was very competitive and they aren't necessarily getting as many customers from Chicago as they're getting, you know, for instance, up the interstate from Kansas City or Omaha up into Minnesota. There's a real pipeline there, and there's an opportunity. So it was really looked at as where are your opportunities, where can we best use our resources, and we can't do everything at this time, and we hope to be able to expand to do more in Chicago, but right now that's a market that we're just not able to capitalize as much as a lot of our competitors.
You know, there's all generalities are false, but they used to generally say that a tourist is anybody that lives 50 miles from where their destination is. And We look at that, certainly the Mecca, the place that gets most of the tourism attraction, is places like Minneapolis with all of their theaters and their stadiums and their sports venues and everything they have. It's just, you might as well, right? And the cars in my town were going to the metro area because of all the attractions they have. I know Minneapolis parks are supported by the state dollars, where our parks aren't. But yet you look at the average attendance in a metro Minneapolis park is just astronomical, probably more than our state parks. And I look at, you use that saying 50 miles or more, certainly it's not our traditional thought of people going up north. It's people going to the metro area, and I think that's something that we should recognize and try to capitalize on. I know Mankato thinks it's a great deal when they advertise the Vikings in preseason. They paint the streets purple. And I look at if that saying, a tourist is someone that comes 50 miles away, then the number one tourist attraction in the state by far is Mall of America. And the capital is, what, sixth or seventh? Not now, but maybe when it gets fixed up it will be. But it's really something when you look at the venues we have all over the state that are really, really something that's making our quality of life one of the highest in the nation. And with that, no more questions?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Norton.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you. I've been really quite impressed with the number of ads I've seen both in social media and other places over the last year, and I've been really excited about Minnesota and what we have to offer and that we're finally telling people so in a more visible way. So I think it's been a wonderful campaign, and I thank you for that. And I should put a plug in. Representative Gunther mentions folks migrate up to the Twin Cities, and indeed they do, but I explored a little part of southern Minnesota for the first time this year in the Lanesboro area, and so I'm going to put a plug in. Lanesboro is an absolutely marvelous place to visit, and I hope we can remember that there are little pockets like Lanesboro in southern Minnesota that folks, when I was there and I went to a play and I did a bed and breakfast, and you know, it was a treat for my husband and I right after session last year, and the town was filled with people from the Twin Cities. They were the people in the bed and breakfast with us were all Twin Cities folks. We were the Lone Rochester people. So we just have to remember there are those gems all over our state, and hope you'll continue to share all of them.
Great. Thank you.
And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you very much. We got everything done.